doesn't seem to matter when the week is nearly through. Better find something to do, cause the end is coming soon. Yeah, the end is coming.
Hello, and welcome to Generation Goat, number 19. I'm John Martin from songstosavedyourwife.com, shlisten.com, and with me, as always, E. Christopher Clark, Geek Force 5. Say hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Awesome. And this time we have a guest star. Guest star, do you want to reveal yourself?
Sure. My name is Andy Hicks from Geek USA, The Pluto Tapes, and 2010 Our Hideous Future.
That's right.
The musical. Yes.
Hey, Andy.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for coming to our little show.
Oh, I'm also from a little band, maybe you've heard of it, called Soma.
Yes. He admits it.
I can't
quite possibly the seventh best band ever to come out of Chelmsford during 1996.
I thought there were six bands to come out.
Yes, we were the seventh.
I thought you were going to see quite possibly the seventh best band ever to come out of John Martin's basement.
That's right.
At least the second best band to come out of John Martin's basement.
That's right. Yeah. It was quite possibly the only band with instruments to come out of
this. This is true.
Well
but
done.
Could we play them?
We sold a landmark 10 demo tapes. So.
1996, that was, if I'm doing my math correctly, 15 years ago.
That's true.
Just about
15 years since we put out that demo tape that we sold to 10 people.
I feel like it's high time that the band got together and had a 15 year reunion tour.
Well, I think so.
I think if we just played your songs and we got like other people to play our parts,
we'd have like everybody. I could have actors dressed like you guys or something.
Hey, there we go.
Absolutely right. Right.
And Shia LaBeouf as John Martin.
Oh, he ruins everything.
Stop ruining my childhood, Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, if you've got a franchise and you need it ruined, call that guy.
I really have no problem with him. I don't know what people... I don't know.
You know, I think it all stems back to John and I going into the middle of Cambridge one time to see... what was it called? The Battle of Shaker Heights?
That's right.
which was... A movie, the second movie to come out of Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's Project Greenlight. And Shia LaBeouf was fresh off of Holes at that point. That may be where the hatred of Shia stems from.
No, it's Transformers and Indy 4, actually.
It is, John. And I will tell you exactly what the problem people have with Shia LaBeouf is. Us growing up as kids, you know, in our heads, we wanted to be in the Transformers movie. In our heads, we were like, oh my God, I'm going to be in the next Indiana Jones movie. Indiana Jones is my imaginary friend. Oh my God, we're going to hang out. It's going to be awesome. Shia LaBeouf got to do all the things that we wanted to do when we were 10.
It's true. It's true.
And then we just never got to that point. But here's this kid coming up like, oh, I was in Holes. Okay. You know, that's a movie based on a Louis Sachar book, and I don't even know how to pronounce his name, but whatever. Yeah.
But to hell with that guy.
To hell with that guy, exactly. You know, I really have no problem with him as an actor. I just think that he just gets a lot of parts that you wanted when you were 10.
Yeah, well, pretty much. Sure. I mean, you know, thankfully he hasn't done everything I wanted to do when I was 10. Like, he hasn't, you know, actually ridden a dinosaur or fronted Genesis, which I think I really wanted to do when I was 10.
That's there is down. Always the third Transformers movie that could take care of both of those things with a Dinobot and a Phil Collins bot.
That's true.
That'd be awesome. It would drum like you wouldn't believe.
What would it transform into?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know.
Yeah, right?
It would have to transform into something, some automobile that GM makes, right?
I think it would turn into Peter Gabriel, actually. I don't know. That's pretty crazy.
Be a triple changer. Turn. Wow. Who was the guy after Phil? I don't know. But.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, Shia LaBeouf is probably a decent guy. You know. He's got beef in his name. I like to eat beef.
LaBeouf.
So that's, we got that in common. Right. Mm. Not that I would eat Shia. Never mind. What?
I mean, is Shia even the worst thing about that Transformers movie, though?
No.
I mean, no. Okay. I'm glad we agree on that.
The Transformer that pees, actually, is the worst
thing. Well, that's the second one. That one's,
I think it caught the end of the first Transformers movie. The second one, I was told there was a Transformer with testicles.
There was.
I think that's the worst thing ever.
It was horrible.
No. I don't remember getting that one as a kid.
No, I don't remember that one either. I think the balls were the hardest part for parents to find in the stores, and I think that's just, you know, it was like the middle lion in Voltron. You know, you just couldn't
find them.
Don't you love how I dredge up bad memories for John? You can just sort of feel him.
John never had the middle lion.
No, actually, I had them all. I had them all, and then my first day of first grade, somebody broke the green one. You know, and but I also had the Voltron castle, which lived in our band basement for a while.
You brought this up on a previous podcast, but we determined that it lived in the basement, but none of us ever saw it. Right?
It was in a box, but I did take it out once in a while.
We did see Robbie the Robot, but
that's true.
But true. Not.
Well, you never knew during a band practice when Gyro might break out. So.
Right.
that's just how we threw down.
My favorite thing about Rob was that they were like, "Oh my God, nobody buys like home video games anymore. We need to add a toy, right?" And that's basically, and you guys probably know how this happened. They were like, "Okay, we need to stick a toy onto it so people actually purchase this thing," because like people got so burned by Atari and the ET game and all that stuff that they're like, "Oh, we got to stick this stupid robot on it, and then people will buy it." And then people played with Robbie, and they're like, "This is stupid. Ooh, Mario."
Yeah. You know,
and history was made.
I actually bought myself a birthday present today. It's a USB Nintendo controller, classic Nintendo controller.
Nice.
So I can play with my emulator in style.
That's gorgeous.
Very, very cool. Your birthday is just a couple of days away, or about a week away.
Yeah, next Tuesday. I will be even older.
Yeah. February 1st, right?
That's right, sir. That's right.
Take note. Identity thefts, thieves.
That's right. Also, my social security number is...
Hey, we didn't give the year, you know.
Yeah. It'll be fine for, like, the four people that listen to this. We know who they are.
Exactly. We do, yeah. Except, will Andy listen now that he's on the show?
I won't. I'll be thoroughly embarrassed because I've just been making this show awful. So, you know, you guys are great. I really enjoy listening to you guys, and I thought that like being on the show would be like talking to my dashboard when you guys were on, because I listened to you guys in the car, and now it's just more like embarrassing somehow.
Well, no. we can
feel every time.
We can talk and ignore you, and you can just shout things at us.
That's
That'd be great, because Alyssa made pizza, so I'm going to eat that, and you guys can say things.
All right.
And I might chime in every now and then with a mouthful of stuff.
I've been listening a lot to a podcast that we may or may not have inspired called that I can't remember the name of right now. The Waysiders podcast. There you go.
Awesome names.
I am fantastic with names. I'm big with names. And there is always someone eating in one of their podcasts.
Nice.
So I feel like we are, you know, we inspired them. Now they're inspiring us back.
I don't have any pizza, man.
Sorry?
Where's my pizza at?
Well, I would feed you pizza through the computer, but it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. We are missing that peripheral.
Yes.
I got like a tin of mints here.
Maybe.
That'll work.
That's one thing. You know, this was not promised in Back to the Future 2, but I would like a peripheral that, you know, you could, you know, we could all share a pizza with. You know,
rock on.
Teleport, right?
I got a grocery bag right next to me. I got potato sticks and mouthwash.
I think I mentioned this before we started recording. I have next to me Ithaca Beer Company Apricot Wheat. I'm drinking for the first time during a podcast.
Wow.
And this was picked out for me by another member of our illustrious band, who shall remain I don't know. She does a lot of things anonymously online, so but we can say it's Beth. I won't say last names.
Hey Beth, thank you.
Hey Beth.
It's Beth. I think the last name was Le Bassist.
That's right.
The Bassist. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Beth Le Bassist.
Because if you had a band in the '90s, you needed a girl playing the bass.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way credibility happened.
Yes,
it's true.
So Chris Novoselic, clearly a crossdresser.
Absolutely. Very tall drag queen or drag king.
You know, that's probably why he said something to do with why he stumbled and let the bass hit him in the head that one time.
You're inferring that women can't catch basses?
No, I don't know what I'm inferring. It's the beer.
So you're just making a general crack now that you're drunk and feeling chauvinist about the athleticism of all women.
Just female bassists.
Hey, Title IX, Chris. Okay, Title IX.
Yeah,
settle down.
Okay, I'm settling down.
What does this say that you're drinking and the quality of this podcast has not actually changed in any fashion? Is that something we need to worry about?
No, I don't think we need to worry about the quality of the podcast as much as we do.
That's right. We've got Andy.
This is true. We have somebody who knows what he's doing, who has a great radio voice, as we've seen now.
That's right.
Just need a lot less us.
Maybe we'll just throw to Andy periodically for a song.
Like, right.
Not a terrible idea. I don't know.
Grab your guitar. Play us a song.
A song, monkey.
I just want to be friends with people.
Well, we don't have a crazy sound effects guy, so we should go for the live in-studio performance guy.
This is true. Except if there's live... No accepts. I would love the live in-studio performance. I will just have to remember to fade out music underneath so that Andy is not, you know, playing against like Katrina and the Waves.
Stupid thing you're doing this.
I'm surprised after, 19 episodes now, that I'm still in charge of putting music underneath the podcast, considering...
It's a sound testament to my loneliness and boredom, actually, most of the time. Yeah, I just can't be bothered.
Has there ever been something I've put underneath music-wise that either of you have absolutely cringed at the sound of?
Yes, every time you put the Pluto tapes on. I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
Oh, quick, throw it in the Pluto tapes.
You're doing it now, I can tell.
And then we'll just come out with...
Those who listen to the podcast, I'm not hearing any music right now. That's added later, which we just discussed. But
either way, it's totally your fault. So... No, we like your music, as you know.
Thank you.
We liked you when you were our band, and...
Yes.
Now we like you on your own. I point that out because the only songs worth noting, except for maybe like two of Chris's, were all Andy's. So I always think of him as our band.
Not true. And Andy and I can argue with you about the songs of yours that were worth mentioning.
If you throw to one of those right now, this podcast is over, sir.
Fortunately, I guess, I cannot throw to one of them because I only have the songs on audio tape. And I don't have a tape player and no way to digitize them, so...
No tape player, that's sad.
I know, it's very sad.
I feel like if those songs were ever digitized and released to the internet, they would start to eat the internet. Just destroy... They'd be a virus. They would just, like, take on their own kind of, like, evil intelligence and be like, "Bleh!" You know,
they all of a sudden... Yeah, they probably would. I mean, the truth of the matter is like, even... Our best songs aren't even, or the best versions of those songs are even on the demo tape.
No.
You know what I mean? No. So like, even the good Andy songs that are on there, the best versions aren't on there. So
no, we were a bunch of nervous kids going into the studio for the first time. We didn't know what we were doing. You know, we probably should have started out like a little bit more low key. Maybe done like, you know, let's do a 4-track demo now and see how that goes, and then let's do this. But we decided to go whole hog, and it just basically like accentuated all of our flaws as a band. It just like, and didn't really, you know, when we played out, we could be pretty good actually. And the songs, we were actually attempting to write songs, and a lot of bands just like, oh, here's my song. It's called Dave's Song. It's about poop. You know, we would actually try to write songs.
Hey, I'd listen to that.
Well, you know, there were tapes of live shows sometimes that existed only, I think, for like a few minutes after the show.
Or in dreams,
yeah. That were, you know, pretty good. And I think because there was less pressure. And I wonder what a band like ours, or what a group of kids like us, what it would be like today, where you have a GarageBand app on your Mac, or you can get Audacity on your PC real easy, and you can just you could just have the thing recording in the background and go through it later, you know?
I can tell you exactly. The level of high school bands has increased by the power of like a billion. Mm-hmm. I used to do the WBCN Battle of the High School Bands every year with Berklee College of Music. Mm-hmm. And every year I was impressed by the level of talent. I mean, it just became ridiculous. It made me feel really sad. One year there was a band that was just about as crappy as we were.
Hooray!
And every other year it was just like, oh my God. Like, it came down to this band that sounded exactly like Evanescence, and they were all 15 or something, versus a band that sounded almost exactly like the Black Crows, and they were all 16.
Oh, gosh.
It was like, what the hell? You know?
Yeah.
Back in our day, it was like, here's the crappy Nirvana wannabe band, and here's their bad cover of Sliver. Okay, here's, you know, the crappy Gin Blossoms band, and here's, like, you know, that I was also in. And there's Soma. And Soma will be playing us out as everybody leaves.
Yeah, well, what can you do? You know, it's funny actually thinking about the GarageBand thing, because I'm friends with a family in York, and their kids have friended me on Facebook, and one of them's in a band. And it's crazy because occasionally I get somehow roped into their little discussions and like watching them like, okay, so we have GarageBand doing this, but we need to tweak these and these settings, and then we need to run it through this other computer so that we can do these things. And you're like, you guys are all like 15.
Yeah.
But it is amazing just how many new bands there are. I saw some statistics just today that were saying in 2002, there were about 33,000 albums that came out in general. Yeah. And in 2006, it was 75. And then last year, it was 100,000, but only about 800 sold more than 5,000 copies. So like, there's just that many small bands that have access because of like GarageBand and stuff, which is
TuneCore too. It's just made things so easy. I mean, you put something together in GarageBand, whatever. It's like, you know what? I'm going to pay $50 a year, and hey, look, my album can be downloaded by people in Japan now. You know, and it's just you don't even really have to be a real band,
or like Bandcamp, which is totally awesome. And I get tons of submissions to my site from people who just have a little Bandcamp page. And
there's a big thing going on next month called the RPM Challenge, which started in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and is worldwide now, which is record an album, 10 songs or 55 minutes, something around there, in 28 days. So record an entire album in February. And the submissions are nuts. People do all sorts of crazy, cool stuff. I have one that I'm prepping myself. So there are lots out there that don't sell or don't sell a lot or don't get out to a lot of people, but it's awesome that we're seeing lots of people get out there and do something musically, I think. That's just my two cents.
We're just listening to Andy eat pizza now. In case you're wondering.
We were just waiting for that sound.
Let's see if we can guess what type of pizza it is from the sound.
That's true, because long-time listeners of The Goat will remember we usually have a video chat going on. We don't have a video chat going on now, so that, yes, we can guess what Andy is.
New generation goat.
Yeah.
Okay, so what if I take a bite right now?
All right.
Yes,
what this pizza is. Now check it out. Okay, I'm going to take a bite of this pizza.
Yeah, I don't hear any peppers or onions. There's no crunch in that pizza.
Not a lot of crunch. Is there meat on the pizza?
There's no meat on this pizza.
Okay.
Okay.
Are there vegetables?
Yes.
Oh, we were wrong. Or John was wrong.
Are there mushrooms?
There are no mushrooms.
Dang.
Good, then I could eat it. I don't dig on fungus.
Well, I know that there's no corn because you're not a horrible British person.
No, whoa, really?
Ooh, corn?
Yeah, they put corn on pizza standard.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it hurts. It hurts.
No.
Why would anyone
corn
ever?
Corn on pizza is just wrong.
Corn should not be anywhere near pizza. I just, no.
No.
Here's the thing. What do you feel about pineapple on pizza?
Mm. Yeah, I'm not a pineapple on pizza guy. I've tried it. What I don't like is when the pineapple gets warm, it gets really, like, kind of tart down there, and I just...
Yeah, I understand.
I don't dig it. Mm. Well, I'm a live and let live kind of guy, and you can have pineapple on your half of the pizza.
Okay,
right.
But keep it over there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way about mushrooms. Stephanie loves mushrooms, so I will. It'll be okay if it stays on its side of the pizza.
This is a great podcast.
It's a very great. I just gotta say that, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Well,
how,
I don't know.
How could magic have not happened when we went in the studio with stuff like this?
I'm telling you, because you guys, like, I love you guys a lot, and it's always, like, really interesting stuff about, you know, new media and what's happening with, you know, going to pod camp and all these things. And now, you know, I'm gonna join in. I'm gonna, you know, jump in and just see what's going on. And it's just like, I like pineapple on my pizza. I don't really like pineapple.
This is our hazing period.
Mushrooms, that's okay. Like, yeah.
You're being
by honest. The end of the podcast, we will have had at least 5 minutes of brilliance, and that's what people wait for, is that 5 minutes. Because honestly, I think if you were to go back and listen to any of them, you would realize that there's only about 5 minutes. But thankfully, as a listener, that's what you remember. You're like, oh, yeah, I remember that part.
Okay. So
if we get 5 minutes of brilliance out of an hour, then I think we're golden.
That's all of that. Okay.
Anyway, okay. We can start.
And that 5 minutes might just be you playing a song, but
that was sweet. Okay, we'll start the magic right now. So Andy.
So John.
I heard you had like a musical or something.
I did have a musical, actually. Yes. Mm. The musical was called 2010 Our Hideous Future, the musical, and it was written with a friend of mine named Carl Danielson. And he's a playwright in Boston. He did a show called Paranormal a while back, and I'd seen him. And, like, Paranormal was so weird. The main character of Paranormal was a imaginary 6-foot-tall man in a bunny costume who was actually an alien warrior from a planet where just all the warriors happen to look like adorable bunnies.
Sure.
And he was, like, you know, talking to these kids and everything, and just, you know, it was a very odd show. And I'm like, I got to work with this guy. He's insane. So we were at a cast party for another show, and the story goes that I staggered up to him, just, you know, absolutely tanked, and said, "Carl, no one's ever done a cyberpunk musical before. We should do that." And then I fell on the ground. And came to, Carl was standing above me with a notebook and a pen saying, "Okay, let's write it." Aww. And so we did. And that's the story of 2010, Our Hideous Future.
But that's not the whole story.
That's not the whole story. No, the whole story was that we spent like about a year writing the thing and developing characters and songs and everything. And then it like got produced on stage. And it's actually going to be produced again in July at Oberon, which is part of the ART. It's like this club thing. If you see, you're around town, or if you've seen the Donkey Show,
yeah, sure.
In Boston, you see all
who
the
hasn't
posters.
Seen a Donkey Show?
I know the Donkey Show. I don't know what you get up to these days, but the Donkey Show is it's a retelling of A Midsummer's Night's Dream.
Nice.
It's set in a disco.
Huh.
So you actually go in, and it's like a 70s disco kind of night, and there's crazy stuff happening, and there's people who are basically only wearing glitter and pasties hanging out. And then they kind of act out A Midsummer Night's Dream, except mostly it's told with, you know, via songs of the 70s, right?
All
right. So there are two characters who are like disco twins with fros, and they're the ones who get turned into a donkey, you know. But they sing Car Wash at one point, and they get turned into a donkey eventually. And it's, the you know, Puck is a DJ who, like, skates through on wheels, and he goes up and sprinkles fairy dust, which is supposed to be cocaine, down on everybody. And sure. This has been a big hit, right? Mm-hmm. So they decided, well, this is only running, like, 3 days out of the week. So the rest of the time, what we're going to do is we're going to get small theater companies who can use the space, and they're going to go in there and do it. So we did, like, a stage production of 2010 at an actual theater. This summer we're doing a crazy all immersive experience of this cyberpunk musical comedy called 2010 Our Hideous Future, and it's gonna be great.
That's awesome. I'll be there, yeah. Man,
I'm really curious to see it, because I saw the version that played at, it was the Boston Playwrights Theater, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And I saw that version, and I haven't been in Oberon, but I've heard and kind of gotten an idea from following Amanda Palmer and hearing about the version of this cabaret that they did.
This cabaret,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so having seen your sort of Boston Playwrights version of the show, and thinking about what it might look like in the in this new venue seems like it'd be really interesting. You just had another a show at recently, right? You did a performance of the musical somewhere else?
At Aresia, yeah. It's Aresia is a big science fiction convention, which is supposedly there was a really old science fiction convention called Boscone, which is still around, and that one is still around, but it's sort of like literary sci-fi and people who take it very seriously and people who go to there's a classes about how to be more uppity about science fction. I don't know, but.
Well, one way to be more uppity about science fiction is to refuse to acknowledge the word sci-fi. I once bumped into a guy at a literary conference, truth be told, but when I said the word sci-fi, he got on me about it being a derogatory term for the genre, and I was just...
Oh, jeez.
Or just to insist that no sci-fi has occurred after Asimov. You just leave it there.
Oh, God. It's like saying there's no good music after 1976 or something.
And we all know it's 1995.
Clearly, 1995. And that's not true. Wild Boot Swings was fine.
It's not true. Except for some bands. But
right. We did it at Aresia. Like, there's Boscone, which is the dead serious sci-fi convention. But Aresia split off from that because, we're going to go over here and have parties and like, drink and go crazy and wear costumes. So we take over a hotel for the entire weekend, and we decided to do the show there. Big success. People really liked it. It's got everything. It's got robots. It's got androids. It's got lesbians. It's got evil computers trying to take over the world,
It's got a song about Bangor, Maine.
It does have a song about Bangor, Maine. It's called Bangor Boogie, actually.
And you guys just put out a soundtrack, right? Like a cast recording?
Cast recording. It's on iTunes right now. It's actually on the Zune store as well. It's on for the three people who own a Zune. It's basically it's everywhere you can go get it. And it is the original cast. We all got together in a basement and just made it happen. I mean, this ties back to what we were talking about before about just bands starting up and just being able to I've decided I'm a band today. Okay, I'm going to release here's all my songs. There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it all ties back into this sort of new aesthetic that's developed about just doing it. I mean, to steal Nike's motto, right? I mean, you wanted to do a musical, so you guys got together, you wrote the musical, you found a place to perform it, now you're taking it out there on the road, you put out a soundtrack album, and that I love. And I'm jealous when I think back to our little band, I'm jealous of what it would be like to be in a little band now, because I think you literally could, you wouldn't have the pressure of the studio. You could just do it, like we said, whenever.
Well, to be fair, I gotta jump in there. Pressure of the studio. See, it's not like we were Guns N' Roses and we choked on Chinese democracy. I think what actually happened there is, what was that? Talent is what did us in there, or lack thereof. But I'm just throwing it out there.
Here's the thing, though. Nowadays, I mean, if you know what your song is supposed to sound like, you can... record it with your band, and then
it's true.
Feel like, okay, I'm gonna, I personally am going to bring up the guitar here or bring up the drums here because, or the keyboards or whatever because, I know what it's supposed to sound like. I know what the balance is supposed to be. I know what the,
right.
And I can just get the guys in because of the, guitar part didn't sound so good, so we'll re-record that.
True.
Whereas in a studio, you drop a lot of money on the thing.
Yep.
That's your product. You're done.
True.
And that's, you're absolutely right that talent was an issue, John. But the time factor, I think, was almost as big an issue, right? Like what Andy's saying, we paid X dollars for X number of hours, and we were trying to cram so much in.
It was actually 13 hours and $666. So, why we saw anything good coming out of that, I'm not sure.
It's like, if you really want to go in there and take our three best songs in and do like an EP like that, I think we were almost trying to go for a full album. I mean, look at the tape, there's like 8 songs or something.
Yeah, there's 6.
There's 6 songs, but still it's like, I don't know. But we were 16, what do you want? I mean,
dumb. It's true. The thing is, look, I don't care for the young people. If people who listen to this know, or your godless liberal values, but it would seem to me that if there were like a promotional track from this musical, mm-hmm. or a clip of a promotional track.
Yes.
We could have stuck it in just now.
That's true.
To wash out that taste of that Pluto tapes from nowhere.
Oh, that's gonna suck. Mm.
Well, you know, all tracks probably, it's possible since it is on iTunes that the guy who puts the music underneath the podcast could find the songs and buy the songs and put them under there. I'm just saying.
Why would you want to do that?
Yeah. You would seriously just... To support my friend.
You'd be supporting my crack habit is what you'd be doing. Right?
I knew it.
I knew it too.
Crack and
how long's the crack habit been going on?
Wait, that's what's on the pizza.
That's right.
Yes, crack and whore is on my pizza. No, it's olives. It's olives and garlic. Fine, I'm happy.
That all sounds right. Awesome.
It's really tasty, actually.
Let's go back to talking about pizza.
No, let's talk about my musical some more, because I'm really interesting.
Fine.
So, how long is it going to be up at Oberon?
It's actually only 2 days at Oberon. It's mm-hmm. July 29th and July 30th, 31st, rather. 29th and 31st. So we're on a Friday and a Sunday.
Friday and a Sunday, cool.
Yeah.
And I assume the Saturday is just to, like, disinfect the place in between.
Pretty much, because we're going to, I mean, there's just going to be bodily fluids everywhere.
Nice.
Yeah. No, not the good ones.
No, not nice.
Sorry.
Do the robots have bodily fluids in the show? I can't remember.
Not well. Good. That's a really good point because for those who haven't seen the show, which is
how often is that question followed up with? That's a really good point.
How often is any question that I pose followed up with?
I'm sorry. Please carry on.
All right. So here's the deal. The show involves. It's an alternate version of the year 2010. Okay, it's the kind of 2010 we thought we were getting in 1985. So if you go back and you look Blade Runner, you go back and look at RoboCop, it's like in the year 2017, everybody has a flying car and a personal robot. It's like that's probably unlikely, but we're playing off this idea with the way the future used to look like. And so you've got this evil computer took over the world. With the help of these artificial, you know, basically human androids, basically androids called Artas. And the first few Artas that came out were, looked so much like humans. It's sort of, this is a trope that has been in a bunch of other stuff. You know, we're basically the first, you know, I think even Star Trek The Next Generation did it when like, okay, Lore was more human than Data was, but Lore came first. And Dr. Soong was like, I can't deal with this because you're insane. I'm going to deactivate you and build Data because Data's rational. Mm-hmm. And we kind of played off that kind of trope where basically the first few artists were way too human. The main character is a freedom fighter who's one of the last remaining human people fighting for the human race. She's going to upload a computer virus. She knows she's going to die. She knows this is the end, but her lover's dead, so she's going to do it. Her life gets saved by this girl she works with named Denise. They eventually fall in love, and then, spoiler alert, turns out she is, in fact, guess what? Yep. An Arda. So, she's a robot. So if you're that lifelike,
I guess you're going to say Republican. Sorry.
Yes, Rose. She's a Sagittarius. And but the point is that if you're that lifelike, then you probably have something like some kind of bodily fluid, maybe replicant kind of stuff going on. Because there's definitely insinuations that she's had sexual relationships with humans before.
Well, Data was fully functioning.
In multiple techniques.
That's right.
He was. I'm fully functional. How fully, Data? It says Tasha Yar.
I'm going to move right on now.
All right.
That's the second episode, isn't it?
The very second episode.
Yep.
That decided to hit us with the naked now.
You sure did.
Why?
Man.
Well, that'll take the air right out of the podcast. Well done. Again.
What? Naked Tasha Yar? That doesn't take the air out of... Oh, I guess.
Yeah, but you're countering it with Brent Spiner.
Oh, true.
Coin operated boys. Someone has to do a fan bit of that. I'm
well so, played, sir.
Somebody should. I think you're volunteering yourself.
Hell
yeah. You need to do that.
Let me type into. I feel like if I type into this keyboard, you're going to hear it because the keyboard is also the microphone. So right. It'll
yeah,
be all
that
like,
does. That does sometimes happen. But we can, John and I can talk over it, and we'll say something intelligent, I'm sure.
Sure.
Which is my cue to John to say something intelligent.
All right.
Because when do I ever do that?
Dude, did you hear Andy was eating an olive and garlic pizza?
I heard Andy was eating olive and garlic pizza, and I heard that the next Pluto Tapes album was going to be all about olive and garlic pizza.
I heard that. But you know what else I heard? I heard Shia LaBeouf's going to be on it.
Shia LaBeouf, yes, I heard that Shia LaBeouf was gonna do was gonna drop a rhyme or a verse or something.
I think maybe Bronson Arroyo was gonna be playing guitar in it because you know Andy's guitar playing is a little weird.
You know,
it's Bronson Arroyo and Shia LaBeouf are both gonna be on my next album.
That's awesome.
And, but let's see. I think Bronson Arroyo is just gonna pop in and say yeah, and then nice. Shia LaBeouf is just gonna like he's gonna rap and then he's gonna fart for an hour.
So not too different than the last Eminem album.
Nice. Are you gonna run the fart through auto-tune? Because I think that would be a nice touch.
Well, we've already auto-tuned some wolves in this around this part.
No, did they just make their reappearance? Did we just break the cardinal rule?
Actually, Nora suggested we might want to auto-tune some goats.
Yes.
But now I don't know. I'm torn.
I think auto-tuned like bodily functions could really be funny.
They really could.
Quick to the studio.
I was just messing around with La-Di-Da. It's an iPhone app that auto-tuned. Not, I think it's actually what they use to create auto-tune wolves. Basically, you sing or you talk into it. It auto-tunes you, and it throws music underneath it based on a genre that you select and a beats per minute that you select. And my daughter Kaylee was intending to sing, but was mostly making silly noises and protesting that she was going to sing. So yeah, bodily functions. I think there was a burp in there or a laugh, and I think it worked pretty well.
Have you ever watched the Auto-Tune News? Which can be fairly interesting.
I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pizza.
Oh, it's tasty. It's very good.
Actually, we should. I should throw it out there because we did have one little bit of business. The reason we saw Andy and Andy's here ostensibly is because we all went to Funspot, and so.
We did, indeed.
I feel like we should say thanks to all the people that came to Funspot because
we should.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, it sort of exceeded my expectations. I don't know about you, but
yeah, nobody punched me, not even once.
No, I mean, well, that exceeded.
I'm glad mind nobody was punched blown. You. People
Your mind
me.
Was blown.
Nobody spat on me.
We played bowling.
Did we play bowling? Is that really the verb that goes with bowling?
Could be because they have a video game of bowling there. One where you just roll the trackball and you bowl.
Right.
My so bad. They did that's, have that, so you could play bowling.
That's right. My bad.
We not what bowled. I meant. But yes,
we bowled with real actual balls. That's
we bowled.
Right. Yes. They weren't transformed balls.
That's right.
We did the candle pin and we did. The regular 10 pin.
I was awful at 10 pin.
Yeah, I was much better at the 10 pin. I think I took the day, but candle
I can't
pin?
Remember yes. if I was better at either of I was not good at either of them, I don't think. No.
Yeah, probably not. You're Chris after all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. Well, did I win one round of Mortal Kombat? I can't remember.
You did.
I did. Okay, good. Good. I'm
My
glad.
Friend Julie's favorite thing for our listener at home is he's here. Well, Julie's favorite thing is watching me beat Chris up at Mortal Kombat because I do it with great regularity.
I'm always amused by that because Julie seems like the sort of person that would not be all that interested in a very violent video game.
She's
but
downstairs right now doing a World of Warcraft raid. So yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
I think that probably the reason that, I owe her a drawing or something, and that probably why she likes to see me get my ass kicked, because I've owed her this drawing for like three
or
4 months.
Honestly, it's just kind of fun. You know, there's that moment like when you watch National Geographic, right? And all the lions are like chasing after the gazelle and they catch one and it's kind of wounded and you're like, oh no, the gazelle. But then it kind of turns into a, yeah, look at him go. Yeah.
Well, you know, I will take the day at Mortal Kombat, I think.
Yeah,
I think eventually it'll happen. Sometime in this lifetime.
Beth could send along some more of those what was the drink you were having this evening?
It's the Ithaca Beer Company. It's an apricot wheat. I went there, she works at a
Is that a breakfast beer?
No. I don't know what it is quite honestly, but I went there because I'd done this interview for Geek Force 5 with Carla Companion, also known as the Beer Babe, about beers. And one of the questions I asked her was, what beers do you recommend for a person who hates beer? And she gave me a few of them. So I stopped by a craft beer store that Beth works at, and she picked out a mixed six-pack of stuff for me to try. And I've been going through it slowly but steadily, and I still hate beer. I just have to say that.
Sorry,
and she picked out some great stuff, and stuff that, like, bothers me less than most beers, but it still, at the end of the day, is beer, and it's just not doing anything for me, so...
Yeah, I was never a huge beer fan. My dad was so disappointed as well. When I was 16, he was like, "All right, come on, don't tell anybody. Here you go, your first sip of beer." And I was like, "Okay, it's horrible." And he was like, "Really? You don't like it at all?" I'm like, "No, I'm sorry, I really don't." It's like, "Oh, come on!" Like, "No, it's wretched. I'm sorry." Later in life, I guess he would have been happy to discover that it turns out actually Guinness and I get along very well. But
yeah.
That's new here or there. But actually, in grad school, at Cambridge, Scotch turned out to be the one I liked.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, it's not weird, but it's, you know, I know a lot of people do like Scotch. I can drink whiskey until the cows come home, or until I fall to the floor in pain. But Scotch, for some reason, I really enjoy like the smell of it. I enjoy. Tasting it, if I try to swallow it, my body goes no.
Well, you know,
I don't know why it is, but
Scotch nerd thing about that actually is that some of them like Lafroig or Ardbeg, or like the ones that have really high phenol content, usually they're Highland whiskies.
Yeah.
Usually the alcohol content is high enough that it numbs your throat and taste buds, so it can like induce a gag reflex. So what you do, and which is totally, it's not a wimp thing to do, but what you do is you do equal parts water and scotch, and it doesn't numb your taste buds, and then you can drink it.
That makes sense. Okay.
So there you go.
That's enough. The kind of beer that you're drinking right now, Chris, the only thing that you'd call it would be a wheat beer, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. Or a wheat beer, you know, and sure, that's kind of it. I mean,
basically, I mean, I went in there saying that the Hefeweizen, I think, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, was the one that Carla had suggested that I thought sounded the closest to something that I might like, because I'd like fruitier things, big surprise.
Hefeweizen has sort of a banana kind of, little bit of a citrusy thing to it. It's good,
that's
crazy.
Yeah. Huh. And I enjoyed the Hefeweizen, more than I've enjoyed most beers, and actually this Ithaca Beer Company, the Apricot Wheat, wasn't bad. You know, just at the end of the day, I'm not a bitter person. I don't like bitter stuff. If my wife drank beer, she's a Baha'i, so she doesn't drink at all. She'd probably dig beer, I think, because she digs the bitter stuff, like bitter chocolate and things like that. But I am all about the sweets, so yes. I don't know.
You may like sort of like one of the maltier beers. I'd give Belgian ale a try. I would share it with a friend. Hogarth, yeah. Belgianette, like a Chimay kind of thing, I would share it with a friend. Ooh. Three Philosophers is a really, really good Belgian style ale that comes out of upstate New York. Mm-hmm. They come in really big bottles. The alcohol content is massive.
Yeah, but I've got three left in the six pack that she gave me, and I'm not looking at it, but one of them I feel like is something that it's really heavy in alcohol content, and she said, you know, this is a at night beer, like before bed.
You're not going anywhere, buddy.
Can you just do us a favor? If you do finish that one and move on to another one, can you make a very dramatic crashing sound with it next to the...
Oh, you missed the chance. I already finished it.
You and I will split a... There you go. You and I will split a like a Chimay or something sometime. We'll awesome. We'll rock out some Belgian beer.
Well, there may be a meetup in the near future. So.
There may be.
Something... possibly next week, down my neck of the woods, more or less. Yeah.
Unless you can find a good way to get out of it, which, you know,
I honestly don't want to get out of it. I'm kind of looking forward to this. I miss you guys and I want to see you more often, and that's that. So there.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. Okay. Will there be, any of that olive and garlic pizza?
I can see if my lady friend would like to make you some.
I mean, we're just, you know, not that we don't want to see you.
No.
That would be cool.
It's really tasty pizza.
It would make it good.
Oh, see, that's better. See, that I would have guessed olives.
Really?
I'm just saying.
From what?
From his... There was a little bit of the...
Fit his fist in his mouth.
Well, that's because your mind goes to strange places. No, I don't know.
That's because my fist, I was not eating with a fork. My fist was just crunched up pizza that was smeared on my fist, and I was going, oh, wow, like that. And smearing it all over myself, like
that's
a 3-year-old.
That's Providence style, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. New York style is you have to fold it. Providence style is you just punch it really hard.
That's right.
And the cheese comes up in your fist, and you're like, yes!
Fisty
Excalibur, and then you eat it. That's great.
Three of your neighbors just looked at each other and what? Wow. What else do we have to embarrass Andy about?
We still haven't gotten a song out of him, but was going to say, what else can we embarrass Andy about?
Well, we could ask him about other creative endeavors.
Sure.
You know, we don't have any.
No, not at all.
What else are you doing?
Well, I just played Luigi from Mario Brothers in a very strange 10-minute play called The Forgotten Princess that was part of Fringe Wars, which Company One in Boston does. And it's all these like little like fringe theater companies, and they all like write a show and they perform it like within the space of a month. They have to like develop the entire thing, and they show up at Fringe Wars and they do it. And we did not win, but I did get to play Luigi from Mario.
That's awesome.
The conceit of the show was that there was a princess named Princess Sheila, who was played very emphatically by a male friend of mine. In a dress,
sure.
Fantastic breasts, and he was Princess Sheila was left out of the Mario games on account of the fact that she was like, you know, very Marlene Dietrich, and she has to smoke and drink, and oh my god, you know, and she wasn't like this dainty little, you know.
So your friend is an executive transvestite.
Yes, executive transvestite. So, this is Luigi's ex girlfriend Sheila. So I got to play several Italian stereotypes once.
Did you do the accent?
I did like sort of the American Italian, like Jersey Shore kind of accent.
All right.
That's what I was rocking out with.
Was there a Mario?
Mario. There was a Princess Peach. There was Princess Daisy as well.
Nice.
Wow.
There were Hammer Brothers in the show. There was Toad.
Nice. I've always wondered who is Princess Daisy because she shows up in.
Quick to the internet.
Mario and Sonic at the Winter Olympic Games, and my daughter always wants, you know, Peach and Daisy and all the girls on her team, and I've always wondered who the hell Daisy was.
Princess Daisy, coming at you, is the princess of Sarasaland. Her first appearance was in 1989 Super Mario Land, in which she is kidnapped by the tyrannical alien Tatanga, who plans to marry her and rule her kingdom. She actually makes a ton of appearances.
She's in the Mario Party games, I know that.
Yep, and she's the main character in the Super Mario Brothers film. And she's played by Samantha Mathis. She's in a number of comic books. Let's skip to the end. Let's give people a little context.
Samantha Mathis, indeed.
Unlike, she's awesome. Her character in Pump Up the Volume is... Everybody has that fictional character who is their crush, their fictional... Mm. Dude, I am so in love with that character.
Hmm.
I need to watch that movie again. It's been ages.
Yeah.
Let's watch it right now.
Let's do it.
I've got it. I'll just hold it up to the microphone.
That'll be helpful. Do you have your blackjack gum?
No.
Okay. Well, I think that's something you need.
I actually did watch a really kind of unusual but somewhat interesting movie today, which I thought I would pass on to you. Through the magic of Netflix, I watched Wrist Cutters, a love story, which has Patrick Fugit from Almost Famous in it, and. The premise is, at the beginning of the movie, he kills himself. And he ends up in a particular corner of the afterlife reserved for people who have killed themselves, which is kind of like purgatory, but kind of not. And he meets a number of people there, and, you know, they try to figure out what to do next. But it had, Tom Waits in it, and just all kinds of crazy people, and it was the most unusual movie I've seen in a while, but it was quite good, so...
You know... Patrick Fugit, Almost Famous, reminds me the dude from who played the young Patrick Fugit, or the young William Miller, I should say, in Almost Famous, is one of the stars of Kevin Smith's next flick. And I did not, I only learned that listening to the Red State of the Union podcast.
Crazy.
So the dude who was like little William Miller is all grown up now in horror movies.
Wow.
What's the story behind Red State? Because I don't know much about it, Chris.
So, apparently, Kevin watched a film that his friend Malcolm Ingram made a few years ago called Small Town Gay Bar, where he interviewed the guy Phelps, whose family is always protesting.
Oh, Fred Phelps. Yeah.
He's always a delight.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so Kevin watched... Malcolm's unedited footage of the interview with Phelps and said that guy or a fictionalized version of that guy would make a movie. And so he set out to write a sort of a religious horror film, I guess, where instead of it being about devil worshippers being the villains, it's about angel worshippers being the villains. So it starts off, I guess, with a very Kevin Smith premise. There's three guys out looking for girls, looking to get laid, and then goes into dark territory pretty darn fast. And so he's self-distributing it, which is the real big news out of Sundance. He's doing what he calls the Gone with the Wind approach, which is taking it on the road one city at a time from now until October, including a stop in Boston on March 6th, I think.
March 6th.
Oh, excellent.
At the Wilbur Theater, but tickets go on sale Friday, January 28th. Yeah, Friday.
He's saying that the tickets will cost anywhere between 5 to 7 times what you would spend on a standard theater ticket, so I'm guessing $50 to $70, but there'll be Q&A afterwards, and Michael Parks... who's one of the stars of the film, who plays the Phelpsian character, is supposedly going to be on the tour with him.
And Chris and I have been to other Kevin Smith Q&As. We used to go to we've been to the Vulgarthon for the Dogma premiere, which was really awesome. And it was a great time because he brought all kinds of other random people.
He puts on a good show, and I'm really curious to see how this... this all turns out. I've read mostly positive reviews coming out of Sundance, and then the negative reviews criticize the things that I kind of expect people to criticize about Kevin Smith films, that, you know, it's dialogue heavy and that there are parts that could probably be cut. There's always something that could be cut in a Kevin Smith film, but you kind of just accept that, you know.
Of course, the other news about it too is that most of this cast is going to be in what is ostensibly going to be his last movie,
right?
Hit Somebody, which is he's a Wayne Gretzky movie he's going to make, and
yep.
That's it. That's his last movie, he says.
Wow. Which is based on a, oh gosh, what's the songwriter? It's based on a...
Andy Hicks.
It's based on an Andy Hicks song. No, it's based on a song. Almost.
Something about leprechauns. Wait, what?
Yes. You know I'm gonna hit somebody.
That's it. That's the one.
You are the hockey player.
The dude who he's got playing the lead, I just watched on News Askew this sort of wrap-up of everything that happened at Sundance, and they have the cast come on stage at the end, and the dude who's playing the lead and Hit Somebody is huge. He towers over everybody by at least a foot, it seems like. It's a Paul Blanton-esque figure. Yeah, I mean, and especially next to the kid who played young William Miller in Almost Famous, he is pretty short, and so he's standing right next to this other kid, and it's it really emphasizes how tall this dude is.
We should go to the screening. We should do it.
We should. We should get everyone we know to go to the screening, because, I mean, I think what he's trying to do is really interesting in not going through a studio, trying to basically make back half of what they invested in the film by the time it opens wide. And I think he's sort of saying this is what he sees as a new sort of, he uses the term indie film 2.0, which I'm not fond of anything that uses the 2.0, but you got to support this kind of stuff if you really believe in it. Put your money where your mouth is, I guess.
So, well, the cool thing is that, you know, he says he's going to use most of the profit to subsidize the making of other people's indie films through his production company. So, actually, I'm happy to buy a ticket, because that's kind of a nice model for movies. It is much like a model for music that I like. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to take Kevin or somebody on his level doing that to really make it happen for younger, unknown filmmakers. Because the criticism of this movement that Kevin is a part of, that Trent Reznor is a part of in music, that Amanda Palmer is a part of in music, the criticism is that they have pre-established audiences that they're selling to, right? So you really need somebody like a Kevin behind these movies, or like an Amanda Palmer behind a Tristan Allen, in order to sort of power them through, I think, at least at the beginning.
Yeah.
You got to support Kevin, I think, in this endeavor.
Conceivably, if someone came up and they were just, you know, incredibly, incredibly good at promoting themselves, or knew people who were incredibly good at promoting, you know, them, and believed in whatever they're trying to do, whether it's a band or music or a movie or whatever, conceivably, you know, that could still happen. But it really does help if you're Amanda Palmer and you can go on Twitter and be like, I'm going to sell 15,000 t-shirts with this crazy thing that I just said. Boom.
Right.
You know, and then your fans just go do that.
Yeah.
Or Trent Reznor being like, yeah, I just came up with this, you know, great new album. It's free.
Right.
There you go. Enjoy it, you know.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, this is where things are inevitably going. People who are in charge of, like, you know, the tastemakers have, I mean, I can tell you, I used to work in commercial radio. I mean, people don't know anything. I mean, people know absolutely nothing. It's like, they didn't see Napster coming. They didn't see, you know, the fact that, like, oh, hey, people are sharing MP3s on their computer. Oh, that's just something that nerds are doing. That won't ever take off.
Uh-oh. Right.
And, you know, the record company never saw that coming. Radio never saw iPods coming. They never, like, thought, like, oh, we could ever be replaced. And just made a series of just bad decisions just all across the board. So I honestly think that, like, this movement, you know, starting with people like Trent and people like Kevin Smith and people like Amanda Palmer, that sort of thinking is eventually going to take over almost the entire entertainment industry, and they won't see it coming.
Yeah.
And it'll just, like, wind up kind of like just, it'll be like a tidal wave just eating the entire thing. And I cannot wait for that to happen.
It's true. No, totally. You know, and it's funny because there are, you know, it's funny because the people who have made so much success in the old model, you know, you see bands like Radiohead who are giving away, you know, in Rainbows, for example, you know, and they've already said pretty much they're going to give away the next one this year.
Yeah.
you know, you got Smashing Pumpkins, and whether you love them or hate them, you know, they're, Billy's putting together basically a 48-track, you know, what would be, what, a triple album, I guess? You know, and giving it away in installments on the website for free. And, you know, yeah, they're selling EPs, but it's not like he's ever going to recoup expenses.
Wasn't Machina Part 2 essentially given away for free, too? Yeah, like, that's even back in the day. That's like 10 years ago by this point.
You know, and it's amazing because I think you need pioneers, you know, of that sort to say, okay, well, we did the old thing, but this is what we believe in. And yeah, it's going to be a really interesting decade, I think.
Yeah. As a guy working in books, I'm really interested to see it, especially the way that it's cross-pollinating. I don't know if you guys have heard it, but there's an amazing... Eventually, it's going to be free. Right now, I think it's still paid, but an amazing interview that Kevin Smith does with Amanda Palmer and Neil Gaiman.
It's on Bandcamp, right?
Yeah, it's like three parts. The first part is interview. The second part is Amanda playing. The third part is Neil reading a story or reading a story and then having Kevin and Amanda join him in reading a story, which is awesome. And just to see that these... I almost kind of feel like, based on when Kevin was making up his mind about what to do with Red State, that people like Amanda were whispering in his ear, like, this is how we're doing it over in music, this is how you might do it over in film. And, you know, I'm hoping that books sort of, or that stories, the written word is the next place that it sort of happens, because the gatekeeper's there. That's a big issue. I've always said I don't get why, you know, it's cool to be a self. It's hard but cool to be a self-distributed musician. It's hard but cool to be a self-distributed filmmaker. But it is absolutely a no-no to be a self-distributed novelist.
Now, why do you want to ask me about my dissertation? Don't do that,
John. How does your dissertation fit in here?
Well, you know. Okay, so basically, I'll give you the short version, but my, you know, I read something that made a lot of sense about it, which was, you know, when it comes to novels, we judge quality in kind of inverse proportion to the amount of units sold, right? Mm. And so, okay, fine, that seems pretty sensible. So if you make something big and commercial like Dan Brown does, then obviously you're an inferior artist. And I'm not saying this is true. I'm saying that, you know, the general kind of literary minded person seems to have this opinion. But see, the thing about that is that it only seems to apply when you go through the same channel as everyone else, because then you're judged against everyone else. So if you are Jonathan Franzen and you make a nice novel and it doesn't sell very well, but you sold it through a major publisher, then you garner more respect than if you're Jonathan Franzen and you put it out on your website and you sold it to Kindle readers, because it's seen as kind of sneaking around the system, like you didn't play the same game as everyone. It's an absurd kind of elitist position, of course, but it's the one we reinforce all the time. It's the same with music, or it used to be, you know, and you don't really hear as many people yelling sellout. Not a lot of people go to Iron and Wine and yell sellout at Sam Beam because, you know, Such Great Heights was in an M&M's commercial or something. But,
I've noticed that. And I think that, I think it's a positive thing, because back in the 90s, you know, starting with the punk movement, that almost became like a joke. It almost became absurd.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you mean more than five people have heard of you? You're obviously a sellout.
Right. And there's the implication that you're not quite as good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I used to hate people who would just, you know, he shall remain nameless, but he used to be our drummer, you know, just get really upset at like Guster for, oh my God, people have heard of them now. Now I can't like them. It's like their old CDs are just as good as they were yesterday, dude. Right. You know?
There are times when a band, you know, clearly makes a very calculated attempt to kind of seize a particular kind of popularity. And I mean, I think in that sense, you can still reasonably criticize
absolutely.
A band for saying, okay, look, you know, we get that you want to make more money, but you have abandoned the thing that made us like you.
Or you know, you have a band like, the first band that comes to mind is the Goo Goo Dolls. That's really embarrassing, but,
sure.
Yeah. They'll hit on a sound that really catches on. and then they'll only write songs that sound.
Yeah.
You know? Where, so like they're, you know, interesting, like fun replacements-esque kind of stuff that you actually got into them about, like, well, that's, they're not doing that anymore. They're just writing Iris.
Over and over again.
And that kind of thing bothers me. Like, all of a sudden a band becomes popular and then they start doing the same thing and become repetitive and boring.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily happen. And
The best bands avoid it. But I mean, you worked in commercial radio, so I mean, I'm sure you're well aware of the fact that the band on the other end is being told over and over and over again by the company, look, man, this is what
does
well and you need a hit or a drop in you. So
You're right about that, you know, in terms of being like kind of an elitist attitude of being like, we're the gatekeepers of culture. On the other side, just to, you know, play the devil's advocate.
Sure.
There has to be some kind of like, you know, publishing, I guess, for some reason, comes to mind as being like the ultimate case where it's like, okay, I could write like a really, truly, utterly crappy book and, you know, it would just be dumb, offensive. All the characters would just be cliches and everything. And I could go and publish that myself. And that would be just amazing. Mm-hmm. Having someone actually publish your book implies that somebody has read it and liked it.
Yeah. And having presumably someone who reads a lot of books.
Yeah, exactly. Someone whose job it is to be like, this is a pretty good book. People might like this. Same thing with music too. We're like, oh, I'm going to sign you to my label because you guys are good. Except it doesn't necessarily work like that in music because you have plenty of situations where it's like, well, you're not very good, but we can auto-tune the crap out of you and you're pretty. So we can, you know.
Well, you know,
and the same thing happens with books, right? I mean, there are plenty. Dan Brown is a perfect example for many people. Of somebody who doesn't have a lot of talent but has been, you know, packaged well, and he's right there, you know.
Well, you know, I think part of it too, like the other dimension, and you know, I'll shut up about it, but I think it's also where the risk is, right? Like in publishing, the risk is all the publishers, okay, because they might front you in advance, but it's not like they're saying, well, you took this many hours of studio time and it took this long to write your book, so here's your bill for the book and we'll recoup it by touring. Whereas whereas with bands, you know, they front the studio cost. Sure, the companies do most of the time. You know, they'll front you some money for other things, but then they say, okay, well, you owe us for the album and you owe us for the tour that you're about to do and you'll make your money back on merch. And if you don't,
Yeah. Simon & Schuster isn't renting out Microsoft Word to you. That way, right.
So I think that that's part of the publishing game too, is that, you know, you're good enough for someone to spend a lot of money on you. Whereas in music, well, you know, it works both ways. Bandcamp, for instance, is awesome because I can upload, you know, some Soma songs right now. Right now. Here, folks, go to...
Please buy them because they're great.
But anybody can do it. So, you know, nobody compliments you on your MySpace page, for example, if you still have one. You know, there you are.
Might. I remember.
I think mine still exists, technically, but...
The Pluto tapes still have a MySpace page. It hasn't been touched in about 3 years.
Yeah, do something about that. Make another album.
God. Speaking of which, actually, you guys want to hear a... Do you actually want me to play a song? Because I do have a guitar.
Dude, that would rock.
It would rock.
So I have the guitar. I was thinking about playing the first song from the musical, which is the intro. It is called Near Futuristic Dystopia. And this is how the show starts out. So this is our big, like, you know, I don't know, Rent or like where the Jets and the Sharks are showing up. It's like the big opening number here.
Right. We'll be very quiet.
All right, it goes like this. Oh, this is usually done with synthesizers, so. From the neon skies, software in your head telling pretty lies. If it's good for you, then it's good for me. It's better than reality. Your dog has robot fleas and everything's in Japanese. And your toaster's talking back to you. And your wife ran off with a robot clone of you. The artist.
highly advanced androids originally created to serve humans, make your lives better. But as time went on, they found themselves indistinguishable from and superior to humans. And in this nightmarish hideosity, the United Earth Corporal Government has taken draconian control over the endangered human population. It's a near futuristic dystopia. Another shocking glimpse into your scary, spooky, no good future, and you're here to witness the hopeless cause of the human race. Most humans have become resigned to the new order, but even in these bleak times, a resistance survives. Meet one of them now, and she deftly sneaks into one of the main computer cores, which run the Arda's Ministry of Love, and silently, through a veneer of awesomehood, uploads a computer virus. Meet freedom fighter Kate Brick. Where I'm from, they say the only way to win is never, ever play. I'm off the grid. There comes a time to play your hand, and I'm the last real human voice. It's not a game, it's not a choice, it's all I got. My time is tight, I'll blow it all and say good night. Kate knows she will be caught and executed for this. In the long run, she will accomplish nothing. But her hatred for the computer, which brought the human race into slavery, known as the MC, is so great. And she has nothing left to live for. Or does she? No, not even. It's a near futuristic dystopia, where our anti-hero makes her final stand against the system, and will she save us from our what we become? Was it what we deserved? Load information tape QDP-7A/C. Near futuristic dystopias and you.
Greetings, I am the MC. How may I serve you today?
Well, gosh, MC, how did things get so awful?
Well, Susie, you see, there was overpopulation, solar radiation, mutilation and invasion from mutations of crustaceans. Thank God I was here to save you all. I'll save you from yourselves. And all I ask in return is your total 100% devotion to anything I come up with in my little positronic head. Or else you'll die really painfully. Like this. Ah! Oh, yes. How through the looking glass can you get? How return to Ozian? How beyond the Thunderdomic? How Blade Runnery? Ain't no one who can save us from this. Wait a minute. Who's that girl with the devil sticks? Oh, my God. What is she? She's doing... Oh, no! La, 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 la. La 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 la. This is the adorable character who's going to save the day later on, you see. La 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 la. In this near futuristic dystopia, there grows a single blooming flower with the beauty and the power. Does a heart still beat in this cold, dead town? Will love bring us around? Nah, it's a near futuristic dystopia. Another shocking glimpse into your scary, spooky, no good future, and you're here to witness the hopeless cause of all you petty little humans with your stupid little feelings. Oh, well, that's pretty much the future. Oh, and finally, everyone in the future is kind of casually bisexual. we think that's nice.
Dude, you rock.
Very, very nice.
That's great. Just one thing, we weren't recording, so can you
No.
Do that second one from your musical. What is it? Damn it, Janet. Is that it?
River was long, but I swam it, Janet.
That was awesome.
Oh, that was very nice. Thank you, man.
Nice. That's available. The full version with the full cast and all orchestration, and all that. It's available on iTunes right now. Go buy it now, please.
Now. Thanks.
Yes.
Support Andy's crack and pizza habit.
Support my olive and garlic pizza habit.
And therefore our olive and garlic pizza, because Andy promised.
Right. Yes.
Right. He promised, right?
We
have it on tape.
I mean, he might have kindly offered to see if maybe there would be, but that sounds like a promise.
I kindly offered to see if maybe there would be, and I think that once we go to this place that has both the bowling and the pizza where we're meeting up, I believe that you can purchase your own olive and garlic pizza.
Whoa.
And I will watch you eat it.
Hold up. Purchase what? Our own?
Well, I'll have a slice too.
Wow.
I'll share my garlic and olive pizza with you. How about that?
Better.
Okay.
You know, clearly I need to send you more Care Bears or something. Where's Share Bear when you need him?
I never had a Care Bear. Did you have a Care Bear?
I had Lookout for Number One Bear. That's what I had.
Spent all day looking for Will Wreck. Sorry, that was uncalled for.
That was fine. The second Star Trek reference this show.
It's true. Yeah. It's very true. I was actually watching some Next Generation earlier today. Mm-hmm. Because you posted that amazing photo of Darmok and Jalad.
The world tour.
That was amazing. And we should actually include it on the website because it needs to be seen by more people.
That's pretty great. Mm.
How did you find that?
Oh, somebody posted some funny picture and it wasn't that one, but I clicked the next button and that was the next one.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
So I was watching that episode earlier today.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Shock.
The late Paul Winfield.
Oh, that episode was so good. Go right now, YouTubers. Find it. It's called
Darmok. It's been taught in linguistics classes.
It's
true. That's how good that episode is.
I saw a paper on Darmok actually in a linguistics journal a few years ago. So there you go. Wow. So what do you think? Is that a goat? Should we? Because Chris has to teach tomorrow.
Theoretically, yeah. I'm still hopeful that they will. Some sense will be knocked into somebody's head by the snow and that I will not have to drive in. But yeah, I probably will.
Did you, I know a bunch of schools around here have canceled. Have you been checking the website? Here?
Not in the last hour, but I will as soon as we're done here, probably.
Oh no, no parking in Boston. What will we do?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Chris. You're not canceled yet, buddy.
No. Yeah, I know. They hardly ever cancel, and that's all right. You know, I missed my first class of the semester on Tuesday because of the little snow that showed up then. I should probably just get in the car now and start driving. But
Jesus!
But you've been drinking, and we don't condone that. A generation.
Yeah, no, we don't.
That's right.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry I couldn't come to work. I had a beer at 9 o'clock last night.
Right. Yeah. my whole evening off.
Trying to be safe, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I had one last week, so I won't be in work.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I think that does make a goat, you know.
Yeah.
Well, does anybody want to say anything before I stop the recording of the goat? Will Andy ever come back to us?
If asked, I will.
Right.
I feel like I've somehow ruined the flow of your podcast and just been.
Our podcast doesn't have a flow, dude.
You're kidding,
it totally does. You guys are always talking about interesting and intelligent stuff, and I come in with my poop jokes, and it's just awful. And,
I'm pretty sure that was our best podcast, actually. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, I think we did hit our 5 minutes there talking about music and film and so on and so forth. Yeah,
well, I'll tell you what, we'll leave it up to our listener who is, Andy.
Hi.
Right.
Already here. Anyway.
I might be able to make her listen.
Mm.
Well, we'd love to have you back. you know.
I agree.
I'd be honored. Thank you.
You can be honored. Learn to play the Autotune Wolf song, and it's gravy train. All right. So say goodbye, everybody. I'm going to stop the recording.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.